Good evening, one and all. Tonight's learning is dedicated for the Refu Shlema Shoshana Elka Bat Ataldina Chaim Yosef Aryeh Ben Miriam Esther Malka Gila Bat Chava. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in His kindness and His mercy, should bring them a Refu Shlema B'mirav Yameinu. We are starting with the fourth pasuk in the second parak of Megillat Rut. My goal, and I hope we achieve it, is to do from Pasuk Dalet to Pasuk Yud Dal this evening. Now, that's of course in the best of all worlds if we don't accomplish that due to excellent questions and so forth. That's also okay, but that's what I have planned for this evening. So let's take a look in Pasuk Dalet. It says, "Vine Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem." Boaz came from Beit Lechem. Now, if you remember, I told you my peirush on the word Boaz, which for all the world could have made me one of the Bali Medrash, so to speak, in terms of a Medrash on a name. So I noticed in all the preparation that Boaz is really two words. As I said, it's like Bo and Oz. So what does Bo and Oz mean? In him there is strength. And if you remember what we saw throughout the end of Perek Aleph is that Boaz was this powerful individual. And then we also suggested that his power was not merely physical, because you could have many people with a physical power, but we said that his power is primarily spirituality. And then I also suggested that his power was really that of Chesed, which of course was what Rut's power was. And together you had this, to borrow a line from today, you had this power couple. But unlike what that means today, you had a power couple ultimately of Chesed. And that's, the certain roots where David HaMelech came from. So Vihine Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem. So Boaz came from Beit Lechem. Vayomer Lekut. Yes.
Is there a difference that in Aleph it's with a beis and here it's with a beis?
Meaning where?
In Ushmo Boaz, and here it says Vihine Boaz.
Okay, Boaz.
There's no dot in Boaz. There's no dot in.
Oh, no. That dagesh is not of the moment.
Okay,
but that's a worthwhile question. Okay? Why it's that way, I don't know. I'm not that much of a Baal Diktuk to give you a good answer. So I'm going to plead ignorance. Okay? So anyway, Boaz is coming from Beit Lechem. Right? Beit Lechem was the town, and of course it is, as it was really until very modern times, all towns were surrounded by farmland. It was certainly the case in Eretz Yisrael. So Boaz came from Beit Lechem, v'yomar l'kotzrim, and he said to the people that were harvesting his field, Hashem imachem, may Hashem be with you. V'yomru lo, and they, meaning the kotzrim, the ones that were harvesting the field, responded, Yivarechecha Hashem, that Hashem should bless you. Now, at first I thought I had something really important to say about Yivarechecha Hashem, because I said to myself, oh, gee, that's right, part of the Birkat Kohanim. And I thought, isn't that fascinating and amazing, until I did a search and I found out it appears multiple times, Yivarechecha Hashem, throughout Sefer Devarim. So there was no way that I could twist, turn it, take the square peg into a round hole and make it fit and say it had something to do with that. Now, I guess what we really have to say is that by the time of Boaz, it was everyone ever heard the expression lingua franca? I mean, the language of the land, it was the commonplace language. So, for example, to someone I'm close to, some degree of intimacy, I could say, hey, how's it going? To somebody who's my superior, I would have to say, how are you today? Right? Now, what's the difference? The first is commonplace language.
Casual.
Right. That's lingua franca. That's the everyday language. And so I'm willing to suggest, and I haven't seen anyone say this, but I'm willing to suggest that Yivarechecha Hashem was a commonplace expression. And certainly the expected response if someone said to you, Hashem imachem. So, you know, this seems to be representative of the way people actually really spoke at this time. Now, what it reminds me a great deal of is what Avraham does with the B'nai Chet when he buys Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Until today, people from many, many, many different disciplines, whether it's archaeology, whether it's Torah analysis, exegesis, right? They all agree, whether they're from or not from, they all agree that the conversation that goes back and forth between Avraham and Ephraim and all that, that was really how it was. I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit and say, I think this is how it was. Now, let's take it to the next level. Okay, so we have everyday language, commonplace language, okay? But what does it really mean? And that's what I wanted to talk about for a moment. Hashem Imachem is what Boaz says to the people that are working in the field. I would suggest, and again, it's my own take, I would suggest that he's telling them that he hopes they have the state of being with Hashem's presence amongst them. Hashem Imachem. It's not, you know, how are you? Oh, Baruch Hashem, and you don't think about it. But rather, Hashem Imachem, that you should be Zocher, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should dwell amongst you. Okay? And it's very much like what? Vasu li mikdash v'shechanti b'to cham. Right? Make me a mikdash and I'll dwell among you. It doesn't say v'shechanti b'to chol. I'll dwell within it, but I'll dwell within you. So the Mishkan in the desert was just the physical locale for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence to inhere in his people. So I believe that's really what this expression means, Hashem Imachem, that you should be Zocher to feel Hashem's presence with you. In which case now, even if it was the everyday expression that was used, Yivarechecha Hashem takes on new meaning. If you want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to dwell among us, then we then also want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bless you for giving us that blessing. Interesting, right? It's a very interesting idea. All right, let's go weiter to the next pasuk. So this is a really, really interesting pasuk, especially in light of the world in which we live today, because if you read it incorrectly, it sounds very odd. So I'm going to be careful how I explain it to you. Vayomer Boaz le'aro hanitzav ala kotzrim. And Boaz said to, literally, his young boy, Na'aro, that stood over the harvesters. What's that mean? Well, what word would we use in English to talk about someone?
Foreman. Or the overseer.
Overseer. Now, what do you immediately notice?
But why Na'aro? Na'aro usually means a young man.
Correct, a young man. It does. Now, the idea here, when we say Na'aro, is that we don't know if he was actually Boaz's slave. We don't know if he was just a person of, obviously, higher level than the Kotzrim.
Do we know his name?
And that was my point. Isn't it interesting? He has no name.
But if you look at the story of looking for a bride for Yitzchak,
yeah,
Eliezer's name is not mentioned.
That's exactly right.
But okay. Yet we know that it was Eliezer.
Only from the Medrash.
So there's no Medrash on here who it was?
Not that I saw.
Could not be his son? Or?
No. Definitely wasn't his son. But whoever it was, and that was exactly going to be my point, we don't know the name. And how does Boaz relate to him primarily? Not name, but function. Right? So think of it this way. It would be the equivalent, as a wife, being called by your husband, wife. Okay? Now, if it's said with a smile and a wink and a hug, it's not so bad. right? It's, you know, maybe once or twice, it's almost funny. But if instead of being called by your name, which indicates intimacy,
hey,
right? Hey, wife, get over here, right? How would that sound? Pretty terrible. So you can see that this is function, right? This is function over intimacy. There is no intimacy here. At any rate, he's his overseer, okay? And now, it's kind of interesting. His question, especially in what's hitting the news all the time, sounds a little bit strange. Lemi hanara hazot.
To whom? Like, it's like, right? It doesn't say mi hanara, but lemi.
Right. But it's really saying, like, to who is this nara? Or, basically,
who does she belong to?
Maybe, or who is this? Right? So your first question is, what's Boaz doing? Why is he so interested? Etc. That's, right? Isn't that what you would first wonder?
Well, he probably knows the people keep coming. This is the first time that she's there, so, and he wasn't there, so he...
All right, good.
He knew the first time.
Now, it's kind of interesting. The Medrash and Chazal in general want to extricate Boaz from any sense of having, quote unquote, checked out Ruth. They tell us straight out that's not what he was doing. But rather, he saw her acting in an unusual way, different than all the other women that were gleaning in the field. Namely, how did she glean?
She bent down.
Right. It's sniut. So there wasn't anything that she did that was e sniut, that was not with sniut. And that stood out. That stood out. Similar in kind to, for example, the way Rivka was, or Rachel, and so on and so forth. So, in other words, she demonstrates immediately that she's fitting to be an Ein B'Yisrael precisely by her actions. So he's intrigued. Who is this person? Who is this person who acts different in kind and degree from all the other Na'arot? And there were a lot of them. Now, once again, the overseer never gets a name. V'ya'an, on the eyes of Pasuk Vav. And the overseer, the young boy, who was, or we don't know his age. Obviously, he's older than the other people that are doing the Kitzira.
Couldn't it have just said Na'aro Hanitzav, just Hanitzav Al HaKotzrim?
Well, it even could have said V'ya'an Na'aro, or V'ya'an, right? V'ya'an.
You don't need all that again.
Exactly. So this is the emphasis that it's function over connection. And you're going to see why that's so important in a minute.
You don't need even hey. You can just take out na'aro and it's still hanitzav alakotzer.
You don't even need hanar. Right? You could say v'ya'an hanitzav alakotzer. For sure you could have. But again, it's this formal, functional relationship. That's what's being stressed here. And you're going to see why that's so important. I don't want to give it away yet. So, V'yana na'ara nitzav ala kotzrim v'yomar. So this is very interesting. He answered and he said, well, why two verbs? That's also interesting. V'yan, he answered, v'yomar, and he said. That seems a little bit strange. But even stranger is the way he describes root. And he says this, right? Na'ara Moavia he. Now that tells us already what Lemia Na'ara Hazot really was. That was Mihuzavezahu. Everyone good on that? By the response, you can go back and realize what the question really was. So he says, Na'ara Moavia he. This is a young Moabite girl. Okay, now, how young was she? I don't know. It's an interesting way to describe her. She was married for 10 years. Odds are she didn't get married before 12. right? Even in the ancient Middle East.
Well, she has a new Nishama now.
Okay, but she's probably in her early 20s. But how is she described? Na'ara. Na'ara is usually a word that's used in Tanakh as a 12-year-old or younger girl, usually 12, 11, okay? It's actually a halachic status, which we're not going to go into right now. But the important thing is that it's the Na'ar, right, of unknown age, who describes someone else in the same deprecatory way that he bears his own name. The Na'ar talks about the Na'ara, who undoubtedly is 22 years at least old.
Probably older.
Isn't that interesting? I'm saying at least. Okay? And not only that, you didn't have to say, he just could have said this, right? Na'ara hi hashava im Naomi. Well, this is the girl, if you wanted to call her that, which of course is deprecatory, this is the girl who came back with Naomi, Misade Moav. Now, right away, if I only would have said that, what ethnicity would I have said she was?
Moabian.
Right. So how come he has to put that in there? So you know what this reminds me of? Remember when the Tsar HaMashkim talks initially to Paro about Yosef? What does he say? Nar, Ivri, right? He gives this whole thing. And all of these are quote-unquote put-down phrases. Okay? That's what this is. He says, Nara Moavia, the lowest of the low of the low. There's nothing here. She's, I don't care what you think, in quotation marks, she's worthless. She came back with Naomi from the fields of Moab. So, you see where we're going with this whole piece? It's classic. If someone is treated like a slave or given the behavioral signals that they're no better than a slave, how do they typically treat someone else?
Like the slave mentality.
Exactly. So, for example, sometimes when, and I'm specifically not mentioning the actual historical example here because this is a publicly heard tape, okay? But when two different ethnicities came to America and they lived in the same neighborhoods in different parts of New York, see how imprecise I'm being? Okay? And one of those ethnicities became extremely successful and the other did not, okay? And then another ethnicity moved in, okay, after the first moved out. How do you think the second level group treated the new group? Okay? That's what you see here. I may be a Nar, and I may be over the code stream, and you may not call me anything other than Hey You, and those of you who are here, I told you the Hey You story, okay? But you know what she is? She's a Na'ara Moavia. Shh, I'm better than that. Now, what happened? Now he's going to give the story. Pasuk Zion. Vatomer. Now, the question is, to whom did she speak? Isn't that interesting? It says, Vatomer. And there seems to be something missing here.
Well, maybe the Nara said, she told me that she wants to do this.
Good. So where is it in the Pasuk?
Sort of. Well, the passage before says that the Na'ar is talking to Boaz, so maybe he's continuing the conversation. That, you know,
good.
This is a Moviah, and she came to me to say this and this.
Right, but normally, what would you have... I have this in here just like you. What would you have normally have expected to see? V'tomer I lie.
V'tomer, right.
Okay, you don't even have that. Don't have that. Now, is it possible that you don't have V'tomer I lie because he feels that he doesn't even deserve quote unquote a lie status? He's just a functionary. That's all he does. So he doesn't even talk about himself. He's absent. Vatomer. She said, however, as you suggested, she said, Lillian suggested, she said to me. And what did she say to me? She said, Alakata, na, please allow me to glean, right? Leget, shivacha, you know, and shivacha, and peya. So, you know, the various leftovers of the harvesting process. So let me please glean. The asafti va'amarim, and I'll gather, okay, sheaves, among the sheaves, acharei hakotsrim. So what, after the harvesters. So here's what happens. Everyone's harvesting, and they're not using modern farmer techniques. They're using very early ancient kinds of techniques. And inevitably, certain things fall out of the sheaves when they're binding them or they're trying to put them on the donkey or what have you. So if it fell, okay, at that point they were able to be malakeh. They were able to collect it. Okay? So this is what she said. Let me do this. Do you mind? Now, here's where we see the sniut aspect. It's brought down by Chazal. V'tavo, and she came. V'ta'amod, and she stood. So Chazal, look at it this way. Tavo, she came, if it was already on the ground, okay, and she came in such a way that it was b'tzni'ut. Use your imaginations. And v'ta'amod, and she stood. But if it was part of a sheave that was still standing up, okay, she stood up. So at no point was she revealing of herself. Okay, so v'tavo v'tamod, she came and she stood, the ofen snua, say Chazal, me'az haboker, from the very beginning of daybreak, v'yaratan, until now. Now, obviously has to be a good while after daybreak. Okay, it's probably middle of the day. Okay, and that's what she did all day long. Ze shivta habayit ma'at. Okay, and she did this. Ze here is a funny, unusual way of using ze. Ze usually means
this.
But here it means this she did. Strange, but that's what it means. Shivta habayit ma'at. Until she rested in the bayit, in the house. You know, it means like a little harvester's hut in the middle of the field for a little bit of time. So in other words, what do we know about her here? We know that she's exceptionally industrious. We know that she was extremely polite because she asked for permission. Why did she feel the need to ask for permission? Okay. Well, actually, anybody can pick up leket. But she felt this really low rung of the, you know, of the ladder, and she was afraid, I'm a common Moaviyah, even though she's the princess, right, of the king of Moab. Okay? She felt like, I'm so low, I'm so despised, I have no value in anyone else's eyes, I better ask permission. Even though technically she didn't need it. Okay? And of course, most importantly, we learn that she was an Eshet Snua, which is exceptionally important in terms of someone who is really the mother, in some ways, ultimately, or the great, 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 great grandmother of Mashiach. Okay? And really, she's the tikkun for Benot Lot. Right? Because they were anything but Bitsnua. Okay? Tamar, right, had to ultimately have Peretz, right? Through roundabout means, okay? Including pretending to be a lady of the night, which we are all aware. Okay? And how do you get around all of that? How are you metakein all of that? You become root. So root is the tikkun. She's a tikkun for Lot. She's a tikkun for Lot's daughters. And she's even the tikkun for Tamar. Okay, now, Tamar acted L'shem Shemayim. Lot's daughters, according to Chazal, acted L'shem Shemayim. But the, and they felt, of course, in both instances, that the means justified the ends. In this case, or the other way, ends justify the means. But in this case, however, what we have are both means and ends that are one. We have chesed, we have sni'ut, that form the background of her entire personality. We're good on that? All right, so let's go on. So, Vayomer, okay, Boaz El Rut. Now, right away, she's no longer a Na'ara. She's no longer a Na'ara Moaviyah. But Boaz says to Ruth, very significant.
So he probably knew who she was once.
Once he had that little piece of the puzzle. Okay? Hallo Shamat BT. Now, in case you had any doubt as to his kindness, what does he say to her? Behold, you have heard my daughter. He's definitely old enough to be her father, as you all know. He's an elderly man. Okay? But he calls her his daughter. Who until now had called Ruth their daughter? Naomi. So she's fully accepted by Boaz. It's crucial. Okay? This acceptance obviously goes on ultimately to be a major part of the relationship. I don't care that you're from Moab. I don't care what your past may have been. That's unimportant to me. All I care about is this point going forward because I know you're Tachat Kanfei Ashkina. It's a beautiful idea. So he says to her, after giving her this term of endearment, he says, Al teolchi lilkod basadeh acher. Don't go and glean in another field. Stick with us. Vegam lo ta'avuri mezeh. And even if you're not in the process of gleaning elsewhere, don't leave this. This is meaning what? What's he actually telling her in a very besnua way?
I'll protect you.
And this is your place. And you have a future with us. And not just us, but what's he really saying? You have a future with me. Of some kind of future. We don't know what it is yet. Right? It's ultimately going to be revealed. Okay. V'cho tidbakin imna arotai. And so too should you cling to my girls, my young girls. Okay, what young girls? He's not talking about his daughters. What's he talking about?
Granddaughters. Just the early girls.
The other people who are gleaning.
Yeah, the other people that are gleaning.
He's saying stay with them so you'll be safe.
Stay with them so you'll be safe. I recognize that you're an Eshet Snua. I recognize that you're trying to do everything right. If you hang out with them, you have a better chance for protecting yourself and, of course, your honor. Okay? Now, this word tidbak is a very important word. What does it sound like to all of you?
Devekut.
Okay? There's an underlying story. Now, devekut, of course, means, right, clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And that's what we're talking about. In other words, you may say, so too should you cling to the young girls, but there's something else going on. As soon as he introduces this theme, it's more acceptance and more of a statement by Boaz saying, stay where you are, and you're going to grow in your knowledge, your understanding, your faith, your wisdom, and you'll be able to join a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay, let's go weiter. So he says, Einayich basadeh, okay, asher yiksorun. And make sure that your eyes are in the field where they will be harvesting. So it's so interesting. It's as almost like he's saying to her, keep your eyes on the prize. Stay focused. This is where you belong. You're with us now. V'halacht achareihen. And by the way, halacht achareihen, again, before we talked about the veikut, v'halacht is like v'halachta bidra chav, and continue to walk in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. These words are not accidental. They're deceptively simple, just like we've seen in Yonah, but they're extremely powerful at the same time. So we have a remez for Devekut, we have an idea of a lachta b'drachav. Okay? And now, it's very, very interesting, he tells her explicitly, not only are you protected, but I basically read the boys, the riot act. Okay? Because as you already know, she's considered to be exceptionally beautiful. She also has no one physically protecting her. So Boaz took one look at the scenario and look what happens. Hello, okay, tziviti et ana'arim. I've already commanded the boys, levilti nag'ech, to not touch you at all. Okay? What, if you remember from your high school days, nagia. Okay? And they're saying straight out, he's telling her straight out, you're protected. Physically, emotionally, I've got you covered. Okay? In a sneer sense, I've got your back. Now, what happens when you work in the hot sun near Beit Lechem?
Oh, you fry.
You fry. Okay? And, you know, like they say, the old song, on a clear day you can see forever. Okay? So, in Beit Lechem, on a clear day in the summer, you can schwitz forever. Okay? So what happens? Vitzamit. And when you're thirsty, okay, as soon as you hear thirst, what are you thinking of now, guys?
Water.
And what happened with
Rachel?
Rivka.
The well.
Okay, the well. So I can't take full credit for that. It's a little bit from Dr. Ziegler. But the idea here is there's suddenly what emerges on the scene is a water motif.
Water and the amino and the mother will be.
Exactly.
Water is also purity.
Water is purity. Why would purity be so important here? Because that's who she is. Just like Rachel. Just like Rivka. So vatsamit, right? And when you get thirsty, v'halacht el hakelim. In this case, instead of you going and drawing the water, which of course, with a bunch of guys walking around and everything, that could be potentially embarrassing for a whole lot of reasons. Instead, I told you we have you protected. V'halacht el hakelim. You go to the water jugs. V'shatit. And you drink. Me'asher yish'avun hanarim. From that which the boys had already drawn. Right? They drew the water already. So again, on the scene comes the well motif, the water motif. But in this case, she's not doing it. It's being done for her. Again, a sense of protection. Now, her reaction is very powerful. V'tipol apaneha. She fell on her face. She's overwhelmed. Right? Basically, and I apologize because my Yiddish accent isn't that good. Okay, because I'm not a native Yiddish speaker, but basically she's walking around all day long going, ich bin eine Gornisht. I'm a nothing. I'm worthless. Okay? I have no value. She's overwhelmed. The tipol apanah, she literally fell down. See, v'tishtachu atza. So what does this really mean? This is not like what we do as men on Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah during the Aleinu, where we fall Korim. We're talking different here. She fell apayim artsa. She literally fell flat on her face. arms extended, legs extended, of course, in a careful manner, okay, before him. She threw, ever hear the expression, throw yourself at the mercy of the court? She sees him, right, the Wahad ibn Eichet describe Avraham Avinu when he goes to buy the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, Nisi Elohim, okay, Atabi Kerbeinu, you're a prince of God. That's how she feels. She feels, oh my goodness, out of nowhere, someone's treating me with respect, honor, and dignity.
She felt like Hashem sent it.
Exactly. Right? Heaven
but
sent.
Did Boaz know that she was a princess in Moab?
No. Probably wasn't common knowledge. Okay? V'tomer I love. And she said to him, again, she's incredulous. Madua matzati chen be'enecha v'hakireni. Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should recognize me? Va'anochi nochriya. And I'm a foreigner. I have no value. Why are you treating me this way? What have I done to deserve the kindness? Now, if you remember when we did the speech of Ruth to Naomi, I said that was a pivotal moment, a key moment in the entire Megillah. Yud Aleph is a key moment in the entire Megillah, and it's something we need to pay careful attention to. Before I do that, I just want to mention one thing. How many of you remember the story of Avigail Eshet Naval? Anybody remember that story?
Zoves saw her bathing or something.
No, the bathing piece is Bathsheba. There's only one bathing beauty.
Yeah, but he did see her and he desired her. And I think
apparently Avigail, again, how do I say this in the best way, was very beautiful. She was apparently very beautiful. And she's married to the greatest boor in history. After all, what's his name? Naval. Naval is similar to Navela. Okay? He's like a dead animal. So I once asked Arlene, I said, I don't understand. Why would an unbelievably, fantastically beautiful woman marry this lowlife?
He had money.
Exactly what Arlene said. Okay? So I guess money made him handsome. So at any rate, what happens is Naval was asked by David through a messenger in Shmuel Aleph to provide food and weapons to David on his way as he's running away from Shaul. Naval responds, based on the way I've described him so far, just the way you would have expected. Me ben Yishai. Who's this dude? Okay? And he's very chutzpahdik. That's what the messenger goes back and tells David, and David says, hey, fine, no problem. I'll get my men, and we're going to wipe out the entire place. Okay? So, Abigail hears about this, and she decides, well, Naval is not going to seek reconciliation. I better do it, because I don't want to die. So, she apparently dresses up. Who else dresses up?
Tamar.
Who else dresses up? Ruth. See, you getting the theme here? Avigail, years later, with Ruth's great-great-grandson, right? Years later, gets all verpitzt, rides out to meet David HaMelech, and what does she do? She throws herself at his mercy. So it's very interesting how the cycle continues, how the theme continues. And again, with that, we have Boaz's answer. We probably won't get much past, I wanted to go to Yudal, but it's okay. It's fine. Because I don't want to give short shrift to Yudal if it's one of the most important psukim. We're going to see in this, just by way of introduction, we're going to see four things that Boaz cites as reasons for recognizing Rut. Here's the first one. V'yan Boaz v'yomer la. Now, if you can have Vayan and Vayomer, so this is what we would call, in somewhat sophisticated English, a considered response. He'd already thought about this, and now he's going to share it with her. So Vayan Boaz, and Boaz answered Vayomer, and he said to her. Okay? Now, as all of you who've been with me for a long time would say right away, did you even need to say Vayomer La? Could have just said Vayomer, right? But what's the Megillah telling us by telling Vayomer La?
He's giving her kavod. He's connecting to her.
Correct. Divarim min alev, nichnasim el halev. He's speaking to her heart. You ready? Hugad hugad li. It was certainly told to me in a way that I could never forget. Kol asher asit, everything that you did, et chamotech, for your mother-in-law, achare mot ishech, after your husband died. Now, as you all know, he's talking here about chesed, the chesed that she demonstrated to Naomi. And as you also know, it is typically not the way of the world, right, for a young daughter-in-law who's lost her husband to act any way near the way Ruth acted. So that was considered a great chesed. So that's idea number one. Two, v'ta'azvi, and you rejected, avich v'imech, your father and your mother. Okay? What does that mean, you rejected?
You mean go back to idol-worshipping.
Idol-worship. Everything they stood for became anathema to you. Three, v'eretz muladetech, and you rejected, you repudiated the land of your birth and everything that Moab represented. And four, v'telchi el'am, and you went to a people, asher lo yadat, that you were clueless about, timol shelshom, heretofore. So guys, look at the language. Who, for all the world, does this sound like? Who's another figure in Tanakh that this sounds so much like?
Avraham.
Avraham. So Rut is the female Avraham. Is that amazing? And also, what was Avraham's most famous midah? Chesed. So she's truly and honestly the female Avraham. Because Avraham, we even have the idea, Telchi Lechacha, okay? Me'artzecha, me'omadotecha. Well, you have those words here, Eretz Muladetech, okay? So she's the female Avraham. And Avraham didn't even have a people that he was going to. Avraham had to invent the spiritual wheel. He had to become his own people. He had to go from being Avram and Sarai to Avraham and Sarah, and he had to be involved with the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Haran. He created a new world. Avraham was religious revolutionary. Ruth may not be revolutionary, but she's evolutionary in the sense that B'nai Yisrael themselves have lost sight. They didn't keep their eye on the ball. They forgot what was most important. And that's chen v'chesed v'rachamim to other people. And she's going to join with Boaz and reinfuse that into Klal Yisrael.
Okay? At this point, if Boaz said he's heard about her, did he also hear that she was a princess, or that he's not here?
Doesn't know.
Just that she was from Moab and left her family, but
right.
Never met anything else.
Right. But see, the remez about being a princess and all that may well be in v'taz v'avich v'imech. Because usually, to a young girl, who's the more important of the two parents who trains her?
Yeah, my mother.
The mother. Mm-hmm. So it should have been v'taz v'imech. imech right va'avich, but by the fact that it's avich v'imech, there's a little hint that she came from a very important house. Mm-hmm. Okay, and in those days, the head of the house, for real, mm-hmm. was, you know, the father, in this case, King Eglon of Moab. So Halavai Amei next week, we'll continue with Yud Bet, and this theme of the greatness of Rut is going to be magnified even further. And thank you for your great questions and your willingness to join me as we explore this material.